There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by David Walker of the Daily Mirror and Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst. Derby matches are great for neutrals. Bit of spite, a lot of niggle, some good old thud and blunder. It's different for the fans, of course. They know their history and bragging rights are on the line. It all begs the question, who has most to lose in a North London derby? What do you think, David?
Well, I've got to say, after an international break, I think we're all really looking forward to a Premier League return. And what a game to have as the sort of first game up on the Saturday. You've got a North London derby. I think the biggest to lose will be Arsenal because it'll just pile more pressure on the whole the Wenger debate and what's going wrong and what their realistic ambitions are. But I also flip it the other way. You're reaching the point now where Pochettino's Tottenham have to deliver. If they are really going to make the step up from being qualifiers for the Champions League, seen as a breakthrough, what they've done, etc., they need to be winning these North London derbies and winning it in a sense of comfortably. And I think that then takes them into a different dimension.
So it's pretty obvious this is the most important North London derby for quite some time.
It feels very important, doesn't it? I think for Arsene Wenger, he needs to get his team selection right. The microscope has been on in this season.
No more backfires with Coquelin.
Well, you say no. I mean, that was a huge left field selection, clearly. I would have gone with a back four instead of shoehorning a central midfielder in there. But having watched that game a couple of times for my sins, Coquelin was arguably Arsenal's best performing defender on the day. It was the guys around him that really let the side down with their positioning and their decision making. But that's by the by. I think up top is an interesting selection. Personally, I think he has to go with Lacazette, Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. I don't think there's any point holding back. That golden triangle needs to be unleashed against Spurs. And I think that, I'm not saying it will frighten Spurs. Spurs are in great form, but it will certainly make them think about things a little bit and it'll get their back three on their toes. As for Spurs, I mean, Pochettino, you're bang on here, David. Pochettino, for all his excellence, and he is excellent, he's improved Spurs massively, one win away from home against the Big Six. Six draws, nine defeats. It is high time he delivered a victory in one of these big away games.
But the most immediate pressure will be on Arsene Wenger because we all know the soap opera that usually plays out.
Yeah, and he's part of, let's be honest, you know, there have been opportunities when he could have gone, left you with the trophy, boys, I'm off, and chose not to. So he's aware of that pressure building again, as everybody in the hierarchy at the club is. I agree with Adrian. The one thing and we don't know the answer to this, but it's an observation. I am baffled by Arsene's reluctance to play those three. You know, that they're there, and there's been games when you think, go on, get them out there and take them apart.
He doesn't trust them. The three of them without the ball. Lacazette works very hard. Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's, you can't question that. Alexis runs around a bit, but has he got that defensive awareness when out of possession?
And is he interested anymore?
Well, that is the question. I think he is, but I think an edge is gone from his game. And for that reason, and I've said this before, if Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil are underperforming and they're not playing to their potential, then Arsene Wenger has to leave them out. I think he has to make a statement and say, hang on, I'm bringing someone else in because I trust them more than you at the moment. And that might perk them up. I mean, we've seen Mesut Ozil look very sharp in some games. At Goodison Park, for example, Ozil was on fire. Alexis Sanchez was on fire. And I think that was because they had a bit of stick in the press beforehand. I think they wanted to show people that they do care. But look, there's a difference between caring and being able to influence these big games. And I think for the three of them, Lacazette, Alexis Sanchez and Ozil, this is a really good opportunity for them to remind people what good players they are, because everyone's bigging up Spurs, quite rightly so. They've been superb. But you can't. No one can convince me that Arsenal are not capable of winning this match.
But I've got to say, that is a damning observation you make when you're thinking which Ozil or which Sanchez will turn up. Because you think of going into a North London derby, and that is a massive sort of question mark over two potential match winners you've got.
They haven't delivered. Away from home, they haven't delivered. Mesut Ozil was not really impacted on any big away games. On home turf, it's different. He's been outstanding in some of these big games.
But that begs the question, Adrian. Why keep them? Sell them in January.
Yeah.
That would tie in with a bigger picture, which is Arsenal now are beginning very slowly to restructure their recruitment. Looks like Steve Rowley, who's been there for 35 years, is going to leave as chief scout. Dick Law, who does a lot of the transfer negotiations, he's probably going to be marginalised. So they're making moves. Why don't they make the biggest move of all and say goodbye?
Well, they might do. I think they've gone on record as saying that it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they will sell Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez because of the contract situation. It's a lot of money riding on the fact that letting them run their contracts down. So if they're not impacting the team in a positive way, I think there's a very real chance that Arsene Wenger will sell them before the end of the season. And I like the players that Arsenal are being linked with at the moment. I've got to say Fekir, the player at Lyon, wonderful player.
He nearly caused a riot in the derby, didn't he?
He did. He's a character. But I like that. He's got a bit of spunk about him. He's got ability and he looks an Arsenal player. Gorgeous left foot. For me, I think he would be brilliant in a Wenger team. And I even like the link with Wilfried Zaha. I don't know whether there's much, any truth in it, but he's a player that's improved massively. And I think Zaha in an Arsenal shirt could really kick on. So look, I think these are interesting times for the Gunners. And I do think changes are afoot.
Do you think Zaha has finally sort of the pennies dropped with him in terms of he comes from a distinctive background? It's more of a cage football type background, you know, the urban sort of, almost like urban basketball stuff, you know, 3-on-3 or whatever it is. He's now 24, 25. That move to Man United probably came too early. Is he now at the stage of his life where he's just about ready to fulfil himself, do you think?
Yeah, well, yes, but I think part of his problem was this. Sir Alex Ferguson, as we know the story, it was his son Darren who gave the big recommendation, having seen his team taken apart by Wilfried Zaha. Manchester United buy him. And actually, if Alex Ferguson had stayed longer, not retired, I think that may well have been a positive in the development of Wilfried Zaha. But in that whole sort of, where does it leave us? What is David Moyes going to do? Who's going to be brought in? And the whole movement around the state of flux really didn't do him any favours.
Because I hear that, you know, he was on his own, he was in digs in Stockport, didn't know anyone, was completely isolated.
Absolutely.
And he was playing for a manager who didn't sign him.
And he's filled out as well. I think so mentally he's in a better place now. He's probably feeling more confident in himself. We all do, don't we? We get a little bit older, a bit more sure of ourselves. And I think you can see that in his football. What I also see is a physical improvement. His acceleration is obscene. It really is. And he is capable of bursting past anybody. The question mark has always been the end product. Has he got that final shot, that final pass? And I feel it's coming with Wilfried Zaha. And if Arsenal do manage to get him, and I know this may be...
Spurs are really interested.
Yeah, exactly.
As well,
I think a number of teams will be after him. I think he will be a success wherever he goes next.
You know, the other thing about Wilfried Zaha and the incredible things he can do, and just judging the right moments, and he's bedding in at Man United and the actual way it could have been developed. When Cristiano Ronaldo first arrived, so as a young player, in that first season, they did an analysis that showed when he got the ball, his average number of touches was 6 touches on the ball when he got it. Within 2 years, the average was down to 2 because he was used to playing 1 and 2 touch. So you'd think he might go on amazing, but a lot of the other time he was giving and going and playing with people like Scholes, etc., who could play that way. Now, my point is, Zaha never got long enough and bedded in enough to get that sort of grounding. And I honestly believe the change of manager didn't help him.
What about another underfulfilled player, Jack Wilshere? Yeah. Where do you see his future?
Where do I see his future? Well, it's an interesting question. Where does he see his future? I think that is the big question between now and January. Is he going to push for a move? If I was Arsene Wenger, I'd be giving him game time right now. I would. I've seen lots and lots of positive signs from him in the Europa League, in the Carabao Cup. I think he's shown enough to be given a chance. And I've said this before. If Jack Wilshere is fit, he gets into that England squad, probably into the team. Now, the performance of Ruben Loftus-Cheek has probably set him back a little bit in terms of Gareth Southgate's thinking. But I think Southgate has to pick him if he's getting football, because he's a player of some ability. But what he needs, Jack Wilshere, probably, is for Arsene Wenger to go to a midfield three. Mm. Will he do that? Will he go with Xhaka, Ramsey and Wilshere? Hasn't done it for ages. He needs him to, I think, because I can't see him dropping Aaron Ramsey. No, he might need an injury to Aaron Ramsey or Xhaka for him to get that chance. And then it's down to Jack.
Mm. But you know, Samir, you just used the phrase, if he's fit. Mm. And I was astonished to see a season-by-season list of Jack Wilshere's career. Mm. And only one season as he appeared, it was 73% of games. Everything else is around half or less than half. And that's not just the last two or three years. No. That's over the broad 10 years, 8, 9 years.
That's why he's such a hard player to judge.
Correct.
Because, and I know this, having played, I needed 5-6 games before I started to feel anywhere near properly match fit and sharp. He never gets it. Mm. He's in and out.
He's always judged on his first game back, isn't he?
We all are. All players are. So I think that a lot. I see so much more in Jack Wilshere than we have seen, and I think most Arsenal fans feel the same way. But are we going to have the opportunity to see it? I desperately hope so. But time is running out for Jack Wilshere. He needs to force his way into Arsenal's team in the coming weeks. And otherwise, it could be over.
And the other thing is, Mike, if you were another club looking at that, you would look at his injury record, particularly over the last 3 years or so. I'm going, hang on, I appreciate why we want to do it and what's in the raw material, but there is an issue there.
He might simply not be suited to the physicality of the Premier League, and maybe it's the easy option or the better option to actually go to somewhere like Europe.
Yeah, could be.
He just naturally draws fouls. He won't change. You take that away from him. He likes to leave it to the last minute. He's a very balanced player, likes nicking it past defenders, and he just keeps getting clattered. Mm. And obviously, he's had some muscle injuries as well. So, yeah, look, we just got to hope, because he, for me, he's still the best central midfielder that England have got.
Mm. The Spurs right to, let's be charitable and say, be very cautious with Kane and Ali and Winks. In other words, not letting them go to England.
Well, they're injured, Mike. They are.
Yeah, right.
That's not. I did think when we started off at the beginning of this show, you mentioned the North London derby. I thought, can you imagine some of the guys who were, and a lot of clubs have had players, you know, thousands of miles trekking around.
Did they report
for
duty at St George's Park? Do we know that? Were they sent?
I think they were seen by the Spurs.
So my point being,
by the way, Giroud's done his thigh as well, playing for France.
Well, that's it. I think it must be a lovely little break they've had. And I would be astonished if they're not all available for selection at the weekend. And it's got to be said, Pochettino had lunch with Alex Ferguson not too long ago in London. I thought, this is like an old Fergie trick about gigs and co. You don't really need to go and play in friendlies, do you? But you'll be ready for the next big game. And let's see what happens at the weekend.
Yeah, well, they all do it, don't they? Let's be honest. Manchester City at Leicester.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling about this game.
Have you now?
Yeah. Vardy getting in behind that defence. Is this the game that maybe City might be vulnerable?
It could be. I mean, if you look at it from a tactical perspective, you bang on. I'm still not convinced about Otamendi and Stones. I think that City's amazing form and record defensively this year is primarily down to the fact they've got the ball most of the time and they're easing the pressure on their defenders. And Fernandinho has been out of this world. He has been mega this season. I still think if you can get at Otamendi, you get Ant Stones, that their decision-making is questionable. He does dive in, Otamendi. We'd just be interested to see whether City have learned their lessons, because they were poor, weren't they, in this fixture last year. Quite abject. Guardiola got it wrong. Has he learned his lessons? I mean, you would imagine he has. I'd make City huge favourites. But Vardy, I think there is a school of thought, and I would subscribe to it, that Vardy can trouble City.
Mm. He looks on it, at it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the other thing is, Mike, Leicester and their support will accept that they are a counter-attacking team. So they will sit in and just wait, and then wait for the moment to strike. And it will be, you know, and the quality they've got in two or three places in attack, they could do damage to. I genuinely think, I mean, I'm not demeaning Kevin De Bruyne saying this. I think Kevin De Bruyne's been brilliant, I think the level that David Silva plays at alongside him and the job Fernandinho's done, it's that unit together has been the key, in my opinion, to where they've been this season.
For Leicester to stand any chance, we know that their back four can absorb pressure. They've done it in the title winning season. A lot of the guys are the same, apart from Harry Maguire. It's the midfield two. It's Ndidi and Ibora. Have they got what it takes to hold off a world-class team? For me, Man City are the best team in the world at the moment. They are, on current form. So it's going to take a superhuman effort to contain them. But Leicester have upset the odds before, haven't they?
Interesting. Eden Hazard was talking during the international break of Kevin De Bruyne being the best player in the Premier League at the moment. Do you agree with that?
I think he probably is on current performances. As I said to you, I think...
Take the point about Silva.
Yeah,
he,
I've got to say,
sensational,
if you ask me and over a period of time, who has been the one player I look at and just think, gosh, the level he plays at every week. So he's one of these... Sometimes he's the sort of nine out of 10 star of the game, but he never drops below 7 and 8, does he? He just keeps delivering. And his ability to have that ball and open up little channels for people. Yeah. I think he's like a little wizard on the field, honestly. Now, De Bruyne is probably playing better than him, which tells you how good Kevin De Bruyne is. But I think in the long run, Manchester City fans will look back on what David De Silva's done there and think, you know what? Colin Bell got the hero grams at an ear and is hailed as probably the greatest player. I think David De Silva, along with Sergio Aguero, will go down in history as their star man.
They're legends, I think De Bruyne and Kane are sharing top spot in the Premier League. Those are the two best players in the Premier League. I would put Fernandinho right very close to it in terms of what he does, his role. But yeah, De Bruyne is just a joy to watch. I mean, he's just poetry in motion at the moment. And what I like about him, he's got that artistry, the weight of pass, but he's also got the power. He's a very strong runner with the ball. All he needs to win Footballer of the Year, he just needs to score more goals. If he gets into 10, 15 goal mark, he could pip Kane to the top spot.
So we'll park that and park the whole thing about David Silva. What I want to talk about is Hazard. He's been very voluble when he's been away, as they tend to when they go back to their own home countries. He's now come out and said that he would love to play for Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah.
Now, is that the best come-and-get-me plea that we've heard this year?
Well, it could be the worst, because how long is Zidane going to be there?
Well, it depends where he's at next.
It'd be a terrible shout. I mean, he's manager of the year, isn't he? Supposedly the world's best manager, but he's under pressure. I think it's a very real... I think he'll see the season out, but I think he'll go at the end of the season. So look, he might need to move in January to play for Zidane. Yeah, it's not very transparent, really. He's out there, isn't he, I guess, Eden Hazard on that. He just needs to improve his form, doesn't he? He needs to be a bit more consistent. Brilliant player. I'm liking the look of that link-up with Morata. Probably at the expense of Willian's not really in the team, Pedro. Yeah. He seems to be going with Hazard and Morata. I think they can be absolutely deadly. But Hazard has been inconsistent. He's not been at the same level this year.
But they read that at Chelsea and they're thinking, here we go.
Well, it made me smile, Mike, because I don't know if you remember this, but there was a point where a lot of the Premier League clubs ganged up and got messages in, particularly to England, can you keep the players when they're on international duty only talking about England or international football? Because it was getting out of hand with players being asked about their futures. So it became the decree, you can't ask him about Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea, just talk about England. Until I recall, a particular England manager was under intense pressure and it was Steven Gerrard who was in, and it was all about, well, what was he going to do? And the FA gave the message, you can talk about Liverpool, because it was getting off the manager's back. So I'm sure the word may go to the Belgium FA next time. Can we just talk about prospects at the World Cup and go to Russia?
The press office police would be working overtime.
Exactly, thought police. what about Chelsea? We all know, an innately political club. You've got Michael Emiliano, who's always been that person lurking in the shadows. You're not quite sure how much influence he's got. Seems quite a bit. He's leaving. That club's in a state of flux, isn't it?
Yes, and there are days when you look at it and you think, what is going on there and where is the control of the sort of hand on the tiller? And then it all seems to calm down again and they get on the straight.
It's like, so what? Yeah. The team normally does...
They deliver for them. I've got to say this, though. I saw the Emanello farewell interview, the Chelsea TV one, and he said something in there that I would, you literally hit me between the eyes. He said, and I am proud, he was saying proud of the things he's done, including building the finest academy in the Premier League, bar none, was the actual statement. And I thought, well, hang on, how are we judging this academy? Is it judged by how many players you've sent out on loan and who aren't playing for Chelsea? Or are we judging it by how many players you've got in the first team at Chelsea? Which would be always, you know, my judgment of that's an efficient academy. So if it's, oh, well, they sold this lot and we've made £30 million or we made £40 million.
I think it's something like 70.
Well, my next question is then, how much are you paying for your new striker? So you've done all that work to sell a load of academy kids to buy one player for your team. So it, see, for me, the judgment, and I understand where he's coming from, but they say, Michael, I'll buy into that when there's four, five, home, like the class of 92 type thing, like a Jack Wilshere coming through where you think this is the real deal. I'll buy into it. But I just think there's an awful lot of smoke and mirrors goes on there without delivering.
Who knows? Look, at first glance, you think, oh, this is a win for Antonio Conte. You think, oh, you know, he's got this high, powerful figure that's on the way out. But I can't see them not replacing. You know, the one name that's in my head to fill that void, he's up on Humberside at the moment, not doing very well.
Slutsky.
Yeah, Lena Slutsky, mates with Abramovich. I think it's just the kind of role. I could just
but you can't take that role if you've won, was it five games or four games in 15?
It's not a football manager role, is it? It's a football knowledge role. And Abramovich is a massive fan of Lena Slutsky, who isn't doing very well in the Championship, who needs to get out. So you talk about come and get me, please. I'm just waiting for that one from Leonard.
Yeah, come and get me, please. What about Chelsea? They're at West Brom. Would a big defeat for West Brom do for Tony Pulis?
Well, that is an interesting club in the sense of how volatile the support is now, particularly on...
Chinese owners are coming in, which is never a good look, is it?
Change the manager. Tony Pulis was given an extended contract last summer. You're going, well, hang on, they've not been happy with the way the team has played. On the other hand, in the pro Pulis camp, you have got that, you know, the old statistic, he's never been relegated. So, you know, realistically, what you're looking at, I would guess at the start of the season, say, make sure we stay up. But I do believe, and you can reach the point through different measures, where the fans can create a climate where it's untenable for the manager to stay.
What's it like playing for a team where the fans are kicking off?
Oh, horrible. Yeah, it has happened to me. Not nice. a couple of loan spells, I was where it wasn't good at all, even Southend at one point. It's distracting. It does dent your confidence. You have to be really strong mentally to block out the moans and groans. And it does heap more pressure on you and it will tighten you up. And also the manager will change himself. You can tell when a manager is under pressure and when they're feeling under pressure. And that can obviously transmit to the team. So it's definitely not helpful. I think the empty seats at the Hawthorns is what stands out for me. I mean, you've got some massive games, big teams going to the Hawthorns. And there's so much swathes of empty seats. So the fans are sort of voting with their, you know, with their admission fee, really, at the minute. So I could see a change. But look, I've been really anti-Pulis in the past. But I just think they might as well stick with him until the end of the season, maybe, because I think he will keep them up, albeit quite uglily. And then maybe have a change. But they've got to decide, the owners, what do they want? Do they want Premier League survival every year? Or do they want more exciting football? They want more entertainment.
I honestly think, knowing Tony Pulis and the way he can affect his team, the way he'll batten down the hatches, the way he'll prepare for a game, even at the Hawthorns now, where he knows I need a couple of wins, and the ability to sort out set-piece goals for them.
They'll grind it out.
I'll tell you something, Mike. That's a good challenge for Chelsea about which Chelsea's going to turn up this weekend. And if Pulis has got his lot sorted out and if they want to do it, they could go on.
Do you think Conte will bring back Luiz, having made his point?
No. They won, didn't they? 1-0. No, I'd leave him out again. It depends what's happened behind the scenes. If David Luiz confronted him in front of the other players and tried to undermine him or question him, I'd keep him binned, because you've got to be strong as a manager and you've got to show who's boss, haven't you? If it's something different, then maybe you've just got to ease him back in. But why would you change that team? They played against Man United. I thought they played really well. What do you think, David?
No. It's made me smile because I always remember George Graham used to tell this story when he went to Leeds, that they'd signed a boy called Robert Molinar, a big Dutch centre-back, and Robert was there, and George used to put his team up on a flip chart thing, and he did his thing, and he's got it there, and there's Molinar in the team to make his debut. And George is going through, he's got all the squad in the room. And George is going through and said, this is where we're going to play. Nigel Martin in goal, and he's got his back four. And he says, so Robert, I want you to play on the right-hand side of this back four. And he's carrying, he goes, boss. No, I am better at middle of a back three. So he said, we play a back three. I am the spare man. I bring the ball out.
You think the scout might have noticed that,
by the way. But George goes, no, Robert, this is the team we're playing. It's a back four. We play a back four. I want you to play the right side. You'll be, no, boss, you don't understand. I play it. And then the end, George goes, Robert, do you want to play this afternoon? Because this is the team. And he moved on. The point being, you do reach a point where a manager has to make a decision and a player has to respect that. And this thing of a David Luiz, let's have a debate or I'm not happy about it. I'm with Conte on this, and that those players can get Conte the sack or the response he got from the ones he put on the pitch made sure it was a triumphant day for Antonio Conte. Yeah. I'll be amazed if David Luiz plays in the next game.
Another place where it would be a fly on the wall would be the Liverpool dressing room area. Mm-hmm. Southampton are turning up at Anfield.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Virgil van Dijk has been right out there. Yes, I'm happy at Southampton. I'm satisfied with my lot. Really?
Well, for now, yeah. He's just playing the long game, I suppose, isn't he? He knows he's not going to go anywhere for the rest of the season. I'll tell you what, though. Virgil van Dijk needs to string some good performances together to make potential suitors want to pay the kind of money that they were prepared to pay. Of course, all these bids came on the back of quite a long absence from Virgil van Dijk. Yeah. People were going on memory, weren't they? And I don't think he's hit the same levels, do you?
No. And the other thing, you know, that's happened to him, and this is, he's had a real impact in Holland, is that Dick Advocaat said to him in the summer, pack in all the politics, I need you playing for our national team, because the games they had, they could still have qualified. Now, we could argue, is this the worst Dutch team you've seen in decades? But at the point they're in, they needed a strong defender, and how he was perceived, and all the debate and being left out and not trying, I want to go to Liverpool, they ended up basically, without him, blowing the World Cup chance, and it's all gone. And he's now playing meaningless friendlies for them, and they're out of that as well. So he's not been the smartest cookie in all this.
Well, what about Chelsea? If they're in the market for replacing a frizzy-haired centre-back that likes to play in the middle of a three, then they could do worse than they like, couldn't they? So, look, I just think fair play to Southampton. I didn't think they were capable of pulling it off.
I spoke to Les Reed about it, and he basically said, look, we knew that every player in the dressing room, every agent, every manager in the Premier League were looking at the situation. Yeah. They couldn't be seen being steamrolled.
I admire what they did, really. I didn't think it would be possible to keep hold of him because he was clearly so unhappy and so set on the move.
I admired it.
Yeah, I really admire it.
Well, Liverpool learned from it with Coutinho. Yeah. Got Barcelona knocking and they've gone, oh, we'll do the same thing and say no.
It is true. But look, so... I don't know if I can see Van Dijk at Liverpool now. Maybe the bridge has been burnt there between the two clubs. If he does move on, I could actually see him at Chelsea.
Yeah. We talked about the potential implications of international breaks. Sadio Mane is flying back from Senegal, having felt a twinge from his old injury. That's not going to go down well, is it?
No, not at all. And that's what we're saying about when you've got your Tottenham three having an easy fortnight, and those boys who are making... And there is a danger of injury, obviously, Mike, but you see some of the boys have been in South America, some have been in the Far East, whatever. The actual fatigue factor of the travelling they've done, and this was why FIFA went, oh, let's have a designated international period. So these guys aren't going to get over that. And I will be amazed if you see some of the guys who've done the long-haul flights at the top of their form when they get back at the weekend. I think it's a huge challenge for them.
BT Sport game on Saturday, Manchester United against Newcastle. Mm. Interesting, Newcastle linked today with potentially Fernando Torres.
Yeah.
Do you think that'll work?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, I mean, Rafa reunited with Torres. I think they need a striker badly. I mean, Joselu, bless him. I mean, he does half of what every good centre-forward should do in terms of he throws his weight around, he can hold the ball up, he can cause a bit of chaos. But he can't do the bit that you need him to do, and that's finished clinically. You've got Dwight Gale, who is a really lively front man, but still massive question marks about his ability at the highest level. So, yeah, they're desperate for a striker, and Torres needs games, Spanish boss to work with. The St James's Park faithful, I'm sure, would really get behind Fernando Torres. The question mark I would have is he still got it? Has he still got the ability? Has he still got that pace? Not as much, clearly, as he had. But yeah, it's a bit strange at Atletico. I'm surprised he hasn't had more game time because the players that are in situ not been playing very well. Mm. Either he's gone as a player or something's happened behind the scenes. Newcastle, it could go one of both ways. They could sign a high profile dud, or they could sign a player that changes the course of their season.
Mm. Jose Mourinho tells us he needs more toys, stroke players. Really? Why?
Because I don't think he's going to win the league with what he's got, and I don't think we'll win the Champions League. And let's be honest, Jose Mourinho is a serial winner. That's what he's in the game for, even if it's not as fulfilling and as exciting as what, you know, his rival across Manchester is delivering with Manchester City. Mourinho actually gets his teams to win things. And I think he can see one or two areas where they are short of players. So he's trying to.
He's not going to give up on it, is he, at Manchester United? I mean, surely he's going to have a bit of fight. He's not going to give up after.
He's whinging about Perisic, isn't he? He wanted him just to supply the crosses.
I don't think Perisic would have made that much difference. So that, yeah, I just don't think they're going to win enough games, Manchester United, compared to Manchester City. They're way behind them. I think actually they're the one team that could maybe take points off City. Tactically, they could probably stifle them, but over the course of the season, City are going to walk it, I would imagine. Yeah, and is Mourinho giving up the ghost? Is he thinking, oh, you know what? It's not going to happen. Let's go to PSG where I'll just win everything. Yeah. Or is he angling for a better contract and more funds to reinforce? The thing is, no matter what he says, he is spending the same amount in wages as City. He's been given the same amount of budget as City. He's just not playing the kind of football that City are producing, and I don't think he would ever.
He won't ever play
that kind of football.
My view, Mike, is he does a 3-year cycle at places, and it all starts falling apart next year.
Is he alienating people? Because it's very obvious the courtship with PSG now. Okay, everyone's getting linked with PSG. Yeah. Conte's
Do
been
they
linked.
Even want him?
That is the question.
I think there's a big question mark over whether they want him. I mean, they're playing a lovely brand of football at the moment. Okay, they haven't won the Champions League. Let's see what happens on that score. I think PSG, let's face it, can have anyone they want.
There's a question.
I'm not sure. Would he be the new Mourinho for them?
Would they get Guardiola to go?
With the baggage that Jose brings and the noise, the associated noise, is that really what the Qataris want?
Yeah, but when we're going back to United, there is going to be movement. You know, you're looking at probably Luke Shaw leaving, either on loan. A lot of clubs want him. Mm. The Gareth Bale word doesn't go away.
No, and
but he's missed 40 out of the last 60 games.
Well, there's another. That's why Real Madrid. I think the parting of the ways for Gareth Bale is imminent. I think they will trade him because of where they are and what they look for, and they'll look for the next world's biggest star. And the fact that Zidane has been watching Leon recently, and we were talking about him in Arsenal. I think Real Madrid will go on still, just like Real Madrid and Barcelona have done on Arsenal in the past with people that Arsenal's been looking at.
Oh, you've ruined my day there, yeah. David.
We'll see what happens.
I pictured him in the shirt.
Yeah, well, but you're going back to this whole Manchester United thing. Luke Shaw isn't a contender in Jose Mourinho's world. You know what I mean? He talks about him every so often because we, the media, bring him up, and is the lad going to get a chance? If you look at the actual squad and makeup, there's a team and there's two or three others that he rotates around. Personally, I don't think the Mourinho thing's going to work at Manchester United long term. We'll see what happens this season. I would not be amazed if there is a change within the next 18 months. Not by the club doing it, but when it becomes Jose going, do you know what? I'm better moving on.
Yeah. What about one of his predecessors at United, David Moyes? He's making his debut as West Ham manager, brought in, you know, quite a high-powered backroom staff there.
A lot of experience.
Yeah. It's going to be his 500th Premier League game at Watford on Sunday. Got a chance, or has that club got too many structural problems?
It has got structural problems. Who's in charge of buying the players? It is one point I'd make. There's a lot wrong there. I think the culture within on the training ground wasn't quite right. I think Slaven Bilic lost his mojo, and I think he didn't work them hard enough. I think he was too nice to them. They just were unfit at the end of it, and they just a little bit lethargic and a little bit like him with his demeanour. Moyes, to his credit, has gone in there and he's looked bright and he's tried his hardest to come across as enthusiastic and as if he's reinvented himself. Personally, I don't want to rain on his parade before he's had a game. I just don't know. I don't know if he's got it in him to be a huge success because of the recent failures. I think his confidence has been knocked. But they should survive. I mean, West Ham should be nowhere near the relegation zone. They should be 11th, 12th at worst, West Ham. So I think Moyes will get them out of danger, no problem. But is he the right man long term? I don't think so.
Well, and they're not exactly welcoming him with open arms, are they? You know, they're saying it's a gamble. We're going to give you 6 or 7 months. Yeah. Well, I know that's modern football, but if you're going to get someone in...
Were you surprised he took it?
No, because I think...
Just desperate
personally,
to get back in?
Well, I don't think it's a desperate...
Well, they all are, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think the biggest single fact is when you lost the Manchester United job as he did and obviously was devastated by the politics around that, then I thought it was a smart move going to Spain in the sense of rebuilding himself, different culture. He gets 364 days there and he's out again. And let's be honest, we know there are massive things with Sunderland in terms of the owner wants to sell, where you're going to go. And he did resign before he got pushed, but those three jobs and what's happened to him severely dent. So for him, in my opinion, to land the West Ham job, I think he's a lucky guy in the sense of he was manager of the year three times in his time at Everton. But if you actually look at managers' careers, and there are only two or three that beat this, most of them have the real top line ones, you're looking at a decade to 12 years when they are at their peak punching power at a club. And then after that, there is this gradual decline. David Moyes, 11 years at Everton, you can't underestimate what he had, you know, the club, the challenges they were facing, the lack of revenue, the sort of players he had to bring in. He was a brilliant manager at that club at that time. But what we've seen since, I think he's lucky to get West Ham.
Yeah, every dog has his day. I think his day's gone. I think West Ham need a younger guy. I think fresh ideas.
What about his former club, Everton?
Oh, what are they playing at?
Well, exactly. It looks like David Unsworth was one comeback away from this. Yeah. And looks like they're going to maybe trust him for the rest of the season. Yeah. There's a little bit of a whisper going around about Marco Silva and some stuff not quite being right at Watford. Right. They need to do something fast. They've got Palace at the weekend. Yeah. If they lose to Palace, they're banging it.
They are banging it. I mean, I wouldn't read too much into that Unsworth comeback last time out. I mean, Watford lost
dangerous,
their keeper.
Isn't it?
They lost their keeper, didn't they? And the keeper come on, sub-goal in, had a stinker. And don't forget, Everton also gave away a penalty that would have gifted a point back to Watford. No, I think it would be madness, to be perfectly honest, to give it to Unsworth to the end of the season based on the four games we've seen. I think he's been muddled thinking with his team selection. He's gone bold, two wingers, pace. That's what we're going to do. And at half-time, when things weren't going so well, takes them off and starts again. And then the next game, he plays two number 10s in the wide areas. So very jumbled thinking. He's trying to be decisive. I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to make the big decisions. But I can't help but feel he's a bit out of his depth. Mm. Why haven't they gone for Moyes? What are Everton waiting for? Dyche.
Yeah.
What are Everton waiting for? They should be going for Sean Dyche.
Well, there's talk of a buyout clause of £3.5 million. You pay that for some sort of 18-year-old kid from lower leagues.
Do you know, Mark, the thing that astonishes me in this year, there clearly are issues in the sense of, I don't mean it faction fighting, but it's like now, who is running Everton and making the big call? Mm. But the fact is, they sacked Ronald Koeman 3 weeks ago. If you're going to sack Ronald Koeman, who, let's be honest, has had three good years in English football, that's two at Southampton, one at Everton, and a bad 10 weeks at Everton. But if you're going to make the call, this is going wrong, we've got to do it. Surely you have a plan in mind and you're going to go for it. Now, I know that there have been checks made about different managers and what's he like and is he good to work with. And you end up with this thing about, are you going to run with David Unsworth? Which I think certain people in the boardroom want to do. There are others asking the question, shouldn't we get Big Sam in and Sam Allardyce turns up to keep them up, a bit like he can guarantee we're safe? But Sam would ask for 2.5 years, not a 6 or 8 months of a contract. And then you're going, but you sacked Ronald Koeman 3 weeks ago. You've got a very wealthy owner. Surely you had a plan. And not just, do you know what? Michu would love Ancelotti to be here. He'd love Simeone. Well, let's get real, boys.
Yeah.
You know, let's actually get real about what we're going to do. And that's the thing that gets me about the Everton thing. It's just this state of flux the club seems to be in. Somebody's got to get a grip of it and go, this is the plan.
Right, let's get real.
Honestly, Simeone, I've got to, before we move on, what are they smoking on Merseyside? Seriously, Simeone is not going to go to Everton. They can get Sean Dyche. He will go there, I'm pretty sure of it. Yeah. What are they waiting for? I think it's absolute madness what they're doing.
Yeah. Right, listeners' questions, viewers' questions. One from coach I know, Tony Mee. In the light of that Alan Shearer film on dementia, should heading be banned, and if so, from what age, and other adjustments that we could make?
Well, I don't think it'd be from what age. It would be under an age, you say. So I think, and having seen the Alan Shearer thing, and having investigated in the media this sort of thing for now 12 years, the case studies I've seen, and you know, beyond last night's programme, you're looking at the Nat Lofthouses, the John Charles, you know, people that I met. After, you know, I didn't see them play, but I met them, spoke to the families. I think there is a dereliction of duty within football, that there are so many cases that both the FA and PFA knew, and the funding was promised in 2005-06 to do this, to actually still be going around about, well, nobody's got the categoric proof of this. I find that really disturbing. So for me, Mike, yes, we should look at doing boys and girls junior football without heading, and then we've got to kick on with this fact of what is the real evidence that damage has been done. Because clearly, if it is known, the issue with FIFA and our own FA can be one of negligence that the rules weren't changed years ago.
Well, I know, you know, I've spoken to Dawn Astell, Jeff Astell's daughter, and basically they've been waiting for 12 years or more now for some sort of action which was promised. To the specifics, Adrian, you know, I talk to players of sort of 40, 45, and they're now wondering, you know, am I going to get this? You played.
Well, I didn't
hit it much.
Didn't hit it very much. I'm probably on safe ground. No, look, it is worrying, and it's gone on too. I echo exactly what David was saying. It's high time we had a definitive answer. And if it is proven that heading can be damaging, proven, then we need to do something about it.
We've got to do something proactive, though. Yeah. You know, you look at the States. I think it's under 12.
I wouldn't be
now.
Against that at all. And you know what? For the in junior football as well, under 12, smaller pitches, there's very little heading, to be perfectly honest. Making it under head height would be absolutely fine. It wouldn't impact the game, or it actually probably help the education of the players, encourage them to keep the ball on the floor. We see a lot of matches now on 3G, 4G pitches. So I would not have a problem with that. Obviously, football as a sport, I think I would hate to see heading go out of the sport. But in those formative years where bodies are developing, yeah, let's just take the risk out.
You know, Mike, there's some of the medical things going on, and I know of a family where the father, who's now in his late 80s, was a player, and his son, who is now in his early 60s, late 50s, was a professional player. The work that's being done by brain surgeons around this country, we must now be close to getting a breakthrough on this. But I just fear the dangers of taking risks, particularly with kids. You've got to address that and just go, let's call it off.
There are a lot of people, you know, I still don't think there's, I don't think there's thousands of cases. I don't. And, you know, a lot, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have dementia that have never headed a ball. Mm. So I think we're probably going to need to get in perspective. But look, if there is evidence, then let's just take it out of the kids' game.
Okay. No, talking of evidence and the FA, Catherine Gale is a Millwall fan, who's quite miffed at the treatment, understandably, I think, of Jed Wallace. Yeah. She asks, who sits on the FA red card appeals panel and why?
Well, to my knowledge, it is a former player, a former referee and a former manager or coach. Three people. It changes on a game-by-game basis. They've obviously got a pool of people that they call upon. And I'm led to believe that they all watch the incident separately and write a report on it. And if there's unanimous agreement, then that's the rule. And if there's not unanimous agreement, then the original referee's decision stands. I've got one massive objection to this, and that is the facelessness of the panel. Why do they have to be anonymous? Why can't we after the event know who made those decisions? I see no reason. There's no, surely the FA wouldn't choose people that had an interest. So I would like to see transparency. And I'd also like to know what they've been on, some of these FA panellists, because the Bailey Wright incident for Bristol City when he got shoved over, how he got a two-match ban for being shoved over, just beggars belief. It was crazy. And Bristol City were very right to be angry, as were Millwall with the Jed Wallace incident. That was a clear mistake. And for the powers that be to not overrule it, I couldn't get my head around it.
Yeah. David, we'll go back to the Manchester scenario. David Joe has said, has Manchester City's football scared Jose into becoming less expansive and wiped the short-lived smile that had returned to the happy one's face?
Sounds like that's a question posed by a City fan, I think. Jose smiles when his team win. I've got to say, I don't think Jose Mourinho is motivated by exciting, thrilling, attacking football if it doesn't justify the fact the result is in his team's favour. So the purists who are now attached themselves to Man City and loving it, and quite rightly so, and it is, it's fantastic to see, and they are the best team to watch in the Premier League. I just don't think that affects Jose. I think that's there is a thorough, what's his word, the hunger to win is such in Jose Mourinho that he knows the way he can get his team to win, and that's in him. And he's not. But the same happened as we know at Real Madrid with Barcelona with Pep. He is not troubled by that at all.
Yeah. We'll finish, Aid, on England and international football. Yeah. Mark Robson makes the observation: Pickford's distribution was particularly impressive, and it sped up England's build-up play. All the England goalkeepers are outstanding shot stoppers.
Yes.
But does that make the difference when choosing the goalkeeper for the World Cup?
Oh, yeah, well, you need someone with a really strong mentality, don't you? What I like about Pickford is that he's fearless. He made his England debut and he looked like he was loving it. Every single second of it, he was really reveling in it. And that's a massive positive. That will put him up the pecking order. Personally, I would have Joe Hart bumped down to number three at least. And I think it's a straight shootout between Pickford and Butland.
Butland keeps getting injured, doesn't he?
Yeah, in my opinion, when everyone's fit, I think Butland is the better all-round keeper. I think he's got slightly more presence and I think his temperament is really good, really strong. But Pickford maybe is the more eye-catching shot stopper. So I can see the case for Pickford. But there's a really good observation on that about the distribution. I think that is a key point.
People who've worked with him while he's been on loan, and he's been around lower divisions and non-league, whatever, but he's done it, they all rave about that boy's attitude, willingness to work, take things on board, and he is a tough cookie in that he has been bounced around a bit there. Yeah. But you're spot on, Mike, that his distribution and the speed with which he can do it, that is one area where whatever people say about Joe Hart's experience, Joe's not in the same league as that boy. Mm.
Very briefly, both of you, how do you see where are England at the moment?
I think England are getting into a good place, and I'll back Gareth Southgate on one key thing, which I believe he's going to go with. I think we've seen in the past, and forgive me mentioning the golden generation, but we've seen some star names in England teams rock up at major tournaments and fail to deliver. I think Gareth Southgate's been smart enough to see in the junior teams and some of those he's worked with the 21s, where they've been away at tournaments, they've actually got the heads around being away for 2, 3, 4 weeks, and hopefully it'll go longer, you know, with the World Cup next year. And I think he's seen, I need tournament players, some of whom may not be the superstars or the very best in our eyes in the Premier League. But I think he's got a mind, I'm going to take a party here who will stick together as a unit and go and give it a really good tournament. And do you know what? The previous way didn't work with the golden generation. Mm. So I want us to back Gareth with his vision of tournament play.
And it's good when you've got a young player like Loftus-Cheek coming in. He introduced himself with a double nutmeg.
Yeah, I know, yeah. He was really good, wasn't he? Look, let's not get too carried about away with Loftus-Cheek. I think it's easy to have one good game. Can he string the performances together? Let's see. But I really like what I've seen of him. Some great young players. Harry Winks, I think, is tailor-made. For international football, we've got Kane, we've got Ali, wing-backs that are flyers. I'll tell you what, Gareth Southgate, I was disappointed in the qualifiers. He didn't go with three at the back. because I felt that that was the most suitable system for England. He's now looks as if he's going to go with that. That's smart. I question whether we're good enough at centre-half and in central midfield, but I'm liking what I'm seeing from England. I'm more interested now than I was a few months back.
A scout I know has put money on England winning the World Cup in 2022. Not sure about that, but at least we're making a start. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.